I'll admit, this is not how I imagined I would give my first sermon. That being said, a big thank you to my parents, my brother, and my college roommate for being my live audience as I record this. They've been instructed to laugh extra loudly at my jokes. Thanks. The two main texts for today were the story of Ezekiel and the dry bones, and this story, John 11, the story of Lazarus. Now, I was originally planning to preach on Ezekiel. I've been working on my Biblical Hebrew with Paul Keim, and I've never been a big fan of the Gospel of John, so it seemed like the natural choice. I could even show off some of my newfound language skills. But something kept drawing me back to the Lazarus story. Eventually, I had to admit that maybe, just maybe, John had written something compelling here. I gave in. Apparently, I would be preaching on the Gospel of John. When we first encounter Jesus in this story, he's been at the whole Messiah thing for a while. He's made friends and he's gained followers. More importantly, though, he's gained enemies. Jesus has been stirring up trouble, and authorities do not like a person who stirs up trouble. It doesn't take supernatural abilities for Jesus to know that his life is in danger. Many before him have been killed for less than what he is doing. Why should he expect any different? Not only that, Jesus knows the most likely place of his death. He knows that if he goes to Jerusalem, he's a wanted man. If he goes to Jerusalem, he will die. And then he receives a letter. It's from Mary, telling him that his friend Lazarus is dying. We know that Jesus can do something. He's been running around healing people this entire time, so this decision should be a no-brainer. The problem is, Lazarus lives in a town right next to Jerusalem. If Jesus goes to save Lazarus, Jesus is that much closer to death. It's not an easy decision to make, even for the Son of God. I've been thinking a lot about decisions lately. We live our lives in a complicated web of choices. Every moment, we are making another choice, no matter how small we think it is. In the world of science fiction and time travel, this is known as the butterfly effect. It's a term derived from a short story by Ray Bradbury, and the theory is that if you step on a butterfly in the past, the ripple effects could magnify until your entire reality is changed in the present. It's a fun thought experiment if you're bored. How do you get from a dead butterfly in 1909 to, say, World War III in the present? But what these time travelers always overlook is that even in the present, they're stepping on butterflies that could change the world. That is a terrifying thought. I don't think I've ever literally stepped on a butterfly, but I ran over a toad on my bike once, and that probably counts. I also think every time I got stung by a bee would probably count, because that's another dead insect with world-shattering consequences. The implications are enough to make a person grateful for these stay-at-home orders. But I think it's easier to picture this without the dead insects. Besides, stepping on butterflies is very often out of our control. Now, I'm thinking more about the small choices, like whether or not I should hold the door for someone, or whether I should skip Spanish class to sleep in, or whether I should go out with my friends tonight, or what I should buy at the grocery store. Those are the small decisions that ripple out in ways I could never imagine. Obviously, there are big decisions in my life too. Right now, I have to decide what I'm going to do now that my summer study service term has been canceled. It's messed up my college plans, and I'm trying to decide where I go from here. 2 years ago, around this time, I was deciding what college I wanted to go to, and a lot of high school seniors are deciding that for themselves right now. We know these sorts of things are big decisions because we can see all the ways that they could affect our lives. The small decisions, though, we don't notice as much. Sure, maybe you have anxiety like I do and can catastrophize just about anything, but for the most part, we don't worry too much about the consequences of our small decisions. But those small decisions add up. That's why when we read about Jesus in this story, we know exactly what he's going to do. Jesus has never sacrificed his life in order to raise someone from the dead before, but he's done smaller things. He's healed the blind, he's fed the multitude, he's taught us what it means to follow God and what it means to be a good person. In many ways, when Jesus receives that letter, there's no decision to make at all. What he's done his entire life has been leading to this moment. So, what does Jesus do? He waits a few days, and then he heads over to see Lazarus with his disciples in tow. When he gets there, Lazarus is already dead. In fact, he's been dead for 4 days. That small detail is actually fairly significant. First, it means that even if Jesus had left as soon as he got that letter, he wouldn't have made it in time to heal Lazarus. It's also significant because of a common belief at the time that a soul hovers around the body for 3 days after death. Theoretically, a person could come back to life during those 3 days. It was kind of their way of preventing the burying someone alive thing. So, by waiting until the fourth day, Jesus is signaling that this is no mere resuscitation. It's a resurrection. Jesus resurrecting someone is a strong theological statement. So strong, in fact, that John names this as the reason for Jesus' eventual crucifixion. When Jesus made the choice to come see Lazarus, he was setting off a chain of events that would ultimately lead to his own death. I imagine that most of us have been thinking about death a lot, more than usual, these past few weeks. We are in the midst of a pandemic. I have never been more aware of all the vulnerable people in my life that I care about. If I stop and think about it, this entire thing terrifies me. I'm afraid for my own life, sure, but I'm even more scared for everyone I love who is old or sick or lacks adequate health care. Right now, I'm living with the knowledge that people I love are going to die from this. It makes our lives and our own mortality feel incredibly present. Maybe the story of Lazarus should be comforting. After all, it is the story of someone being raised from the dead. And yet, as I read it now, I find myself asking, what made Lazarus so special? Why did he get to live in a time when so many people died? I don't have a good answer for that. I can tell you that Lazarus was not the safe choice for Jesus. If he wanted to make a point by resurrecting someone, he could have done it far from Jerusalem. Jesus isn't just doing this to make a point, though. He's also saving his friend. Some people find comfort in Jesus' godness. Personally, I've always found comfort in his humanity. I find comfort in the idea that Jesus might have struggled over what to do or who to save. Remember, this is the passage where we get that famous quote, "Jesus wept." I know that as we mourn the deaths of those close to us, Jesus is mourning with us. For me, that's enough. Here's the thing. Right now, there aren't a lot of big decisions that we can make. We're being told by doctors that it's all the little things we do, like touching our face or washing our hands, that will make the biggest difference. I want to be able to fight this virus, but I'm supposed to stay home. It turns out, I can save more lives by sitting in my house playing video games than I can by doing anything else. As much as I like video games, that frustrates me. I hate sitting in my home, watching the death toll climb, and doing nothing. Well, almost nothing. Here's my routine for the day. I wake up, eat breakfast, and do homework until I feel like eating lunch. Then, after lunch, I go back to doing homework, with a break somewhere in the afternoon to walk the dog. After I'm done with homework, I play video games until dinner. And then after dinner, it's a mixture of reading books, playing games, and watching TV until it's time to go to sleep. And then I repeat. Sometimes it feels meaningless, and I'm only a week in. So I began to take comfort in the small decisions. On the dog walk, we go a new route each time. I try to eat something different for lunch instead of just PB&J. I've started cleaning, and I hope to have a huge stack of things to donate by the time this is all done. I'm reading the books that I never had time to read before. I'm spending time with my family. Perhaps the last time we'll all be together like this before my brother goes off to college and my parents become empty nesters. These are the decisions that shape who I am. These are the decisions that build up. These decisions are important. They're preparing us for the next big decision in our lives. They're preparing us for when God calls us to do something ridiculous, something hard, something we don't want to do. Hopefully by then, it won't be a hard choice at all. Thank you.